3, 2, 1. Coach Neil Roberts, you must be one of the few coaches in the country, if there are any others, who has a winning record against College of Southern Idaho. And now you get another shot at him tonight.
Well, we've been fortunate. We've beat them a couple of times on their home home floor. But in the paper up here, it mentioned that, you know, we kind of had a dominant situation over CSI. It really hasn't been a dominant situation. They've beat us a couple of times, and we happen to have won more than they have. But great basketball traditions here at College of Southern Idaho, and good coaching, great recruiting. They have a good basketball team this year. They've lost four games, and they've only lost one game since we beat them at our place. And so they are, you know, they're playing well at the present time. They've beaten Ricks at Ricks, which is an indication how strong they really are. They've already played once this week. They beat Weber down at Weber. They play us tonight, and then they come back and play Ricks here next Saturday night. So it's a big week for them.
This is a guard-dominated team, at least the CSI team that Dixie saw in November. The two key people were the guards.
Well, they still are. Beach, of course, is a fine offensive player. They've got a little more to Roar and Kennedy, which are the two forwards that are playing quite well at the present time. In fact, both of them scoring a lot better. Kennedy was just off a broken foot. He had his foot in a cast and got it off and was just getting back on it when they played in St. George. So I'm sure he's going to be a lot better. Plus, the team has a lot of pride, and their basketball program here has a lot of pride, which I'm sure they're going to play better tonight.
This is a different style of CSI team. Oftentimes, they've had the big men up front. This time, a little smaller front line, but quicker.
You know, it's interesting the way that kind of teams have looked at what they're doing. I know that we've kind of built our philosophy at Dixie College on not so much being concerned with the bigger people to get the better athlete and just let the players kind of evolve into what happens with it and play your best kids. And I think CSI has gone to that philosophy as well. In fact, their coaches mentioned that. They went a little more with a better athlete as well as better shooters. And I think Snow has done that as well this year. And so not that we started it, but yet we haven't worried about size. They aren't this year either. They had an extremely big team last year that didn't do that well.
This seems to be happening also at the major college level. You're getting a lot of your top major college teams, Louisville, for example, more mid-range ball players instead of the big seven-footers.
Well, mid-range in 6'10", 6'8". But I know Kentucky has a couple 6'5 forwards that play extremely well. Quickness is still what it is, quickness and shooting ability. But yet size, if you can have those aspects with it too, really helps out. CSI is not as big as they have been, that's true. Yet they're just as good as rebounders as they have ever been, and they're better defensively than they have been.
This Dixie team has leveled off. It's become a high-level team and a very consistent team since the Santa Ana tournament.
Well, since Christmas time, we got together, came back, and have been in our conference play. We could have very easily, with our last ball game, could have been undefeated in conference at 5-0, which would have been a surprise to everyone, I believe. But yet there's a few things happening with our team that we're very pleased about. Alan Raymond is now, we feel like, ready to play and is playing quite well at the time. And Byron Vitoy is really ready to play now. And these are freshmen that have come along and have really improved a great deal. And we're going to play them tonight. Now, win or lose, we're going to play these kids tonight.
Team-wise, statistically, the shooting percentage is getting back up into the range that Dixie is used to, 50% and above.
Well, in our last ball game, we shot over 60%, even though we lost, and we did turn the ball over quite a bit. And we've spent a lot of time this week working on those aspects, not to beat ourselves, to get a good shot every time down the floor, and then to have your better shooter shoot the ball. But, yes, we feel good about our shooting percentage. We should feel good about the way our free throw percentage has come along as well. And now it's our job just to make sure we get into the good shot every time, and then, of course, to keep the good defense and boards the way they have been.
One of the things that's helped get the better shots, and something that doesn't show up so much on the statistics, is the passing. Much crisper, much sharper than it has been earlier in the year, even in spite of the turnovers against them.
Well, I think that when you run motion offense, that it is a slow-developing offense in that it takes a long time for it to get where you want to be comfortable with it. But the more they play, and the longer they're together, the more they know what to expect from each other and also what they can do and can't do as far as an offensive player is concerned. But our passing is a lot better. And when your passing's better, it seems like everything goes better offensively.
unhappy loss against Snow. The kids did not seem to be down. What about taking this week off from a conference play? Will there be a problem getting ready for CSI and BYU?
I think there is. This team has had that problem all year long, in that when the big game is there and we have to play well, they have played well. But on the other hand, when they just go out and play, they've had a hard time with that. Part of the reason for the poor showing earlier in the year in California was I really believe that the motivation of the team wasn't as high as it should have been. In other words, they had a hard time just saying, no, this is a ball game, let's go out and play the very best we can. They just looked at it in a little different light, saying this is a ball game, but. And I don't really know how well we're going to play tonight. I think we're going to play well because we've practiced extremely well. And I think we're going to play well because our people that haven't played a great deal have made big strides in the last month, and they're pushing as far as starting is concerned, especially Vitoy and especially Raymond.
3, 2, 1. I'm talking with Paul Conrad, the head basketball coach of Colorado Northwestern. Coach, a disappointing season in the ICAC, but your kids still have a shot at playoff action.
Well, we're 13-16 overall, and we haven't won a conference game. We've been in a lot of them. We hustle hard and we work hard, but we just haven't been able to get over the hump. So it's been disappointing for us. But we have 6 of our 10 kids are freshmen, so we'll have 6 of them back.
A small group, quick group.
Yeah, we're not real big again. We're like we always are. We usually got some pretty good shooters, and our kids are fair jumpers. But they kind of tire down against the bigger kids a little bit later in the game, and that always hurts us. But if we shoot well and play a little defense, you know, we can stay in a lot of ball games.
You've had some kids that have shown well for you this year. The Springs kid, a good ball handler.
David's tough. He, you know, he won't score much for us, but he handles well, and he understands what his job is, and he runs our offense and gets us going and gets us into our offense that way, and that helps us a lot.
And McBrien, one of the best shooters in the conference.
Tommy's been doing a good job. He's about 16, 18 points a game, and he's been very consistent for us. He only had one bad game, and that was up at Rick's. And after that, he's been scoring well, and he gets pretty good shots. He gets good shots that he can make. You know, I think he has good shot selection, which helps him a lot.
The Decker kid has provided some good strength on the boards in addition to shooting.
Decker's been up and down for us. He played better the first semester than he has the second semester. He's been kind of a disappointment for us here lately, and we hope that he'll come around and, you know, mature for us and be strong for us next year.
This team now, your CMCC ball club, gets the chance to play the spoiler role. You take on 2 of the top 3 teams in the league this weekend, and you could ruin a lot of good records.
Well, they're both on the road, though, and that's the tough part. And it's been a long time since we won down here. I think last time we won down here is when Doug was his last year. That's the only game we've won down here for a long time. So that's about 4 or 5 years ago. So it's, you know, we could be. We played well against Snow last time. They beat us 14 at home, and then we come up against you guys the second night, and you wiped us away. So it's hard to tell. If we play good the first night, maybe we won't play good the second night. I don't know. It's unbelievable with these kids sometimes.
What about tonight's game? What will be the key for your ball club?
Well, I think if we can play some defense and contain the offense a little bit, keep them from getting it down inside, will make a big factor for us. And if we can score early and set the tempo of the game, if we can do that, then that'll make a difference for us.
What about a starting lineup tonight for the Spartans?
We'll go with David Springs at point guard. David's only about 5'8". The other guard, we'll go with Freddie Myers, and Freddie's averaging about 14 points a game for us. We'll go with Tom McBrien at the one forward. Tommy's about 6'3". We'll go with Marcus Harris at our post. Marcus about 6'6". And then we're going to start a freshman and see what he can do for us. We're starting David Kaufman, Dean Kaufman. And Dean is about 6'5 for us. And we're going to give him a shot and see what he can do for us and see if he's going to help us for next year.
And Freddie Myers has been one of the best shooters in the conference, an amazing shooter on occasion.
Yeah, he comes in, and when he's hot, you better give it to him. If he's not hot, then you better set him down for a little bit. But he's a streak shooter, and he'll hit 7 or 8 in a row for you, and he'll put you up, or, you know, and he'll get you back in a ball game. And he plays pretty good defense. You know, he gets overlooked a little bit that way, but he's got a lot of his shots where he steals the ball and goes down and gets a pretty good shot off of that. So he works hard both ends of the floor, not just offense.
This trip, picking up Dixie and Snow on the same trip, that's got to be a tough trip for any coach.
Yeah, it always is when you got the top two teams in the conference. And year in and year out, both these ball clubs are right up there all the time. And it's a bear when you go on against those two.
Coach Paul Conrad, thank you for being with us. Good luck tonight.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Talking with Dixie College Head Basketball Coach Neil Roberts. Coach, this is the weekend that you can determine your own fate as far as a regional championship or a regional berth. One victory and you've clinched at least a tie for that berth.
Well, we expect to win both. And we're playing quite well. I'm not dissatisfied with our basketball teams. Of course, you'd like to win all the ball games, but we've been right there. And that, if we can correct some things, I think we have an excellent chance in regionals. And we hope that we can play well this weekend in preparation for. Of course, we also have to keep in mind if we drop a couple, we're definitely not going. And if we win one and CEU happens to win two, then we're tied. So it's really our job to go out and win a couple this weekend.
Now, this CNCC ball club, on occasion, has given Dixie some problems. But not since you've been a coach. You've won every game against Paul Conrad.
Well, some of them were exactly, shoe-ins. I remember a team that took third in the nation was tied at halftime up there with them. Came out and played an excellent second half. But, they're not a bad team. I think they beat Rex by only 12 a couple of weeks ago. They played CEU to a one-point game up there. And so they've come in here very similar to what Trade Tech is. They don't have a chance to win anything. They haven't won a game. If they can beat us or Snow, it would really kind of make their year. So they're going to come in and free and at ease and not worry about things and just come and play. So I expect a pretty good ball game. In fact, there's probably a pretty high possibility they could hold the ball against us.
They have a couple of very quick guards in Myers and Springs.
Yeah, Myers is an excellent shooter, too. Springs really small and does a pretty good job handling the ball, but he doesn't really score a great deal. But Myers had 19 against us before and really plays quite well.
Your ball club has shown some amazing comeback ability late this year, a couple of times falling short, but it's been some miracle comebacks.
Well, I'd like to be able to play earlier in the ball game with the same intensity that we try to play the last 5 minutes. So if we could get that across and play in the middle parts of each quarter, I think we'd be better off rather than having to try to come back from 10 or 12 down in the last 5 minutes.
You have a couple of ball players that are playing with great intensity now. Maxwell, Gordon Anderson.
Gordon Anderson's really been, the last 2 weeks especially, has played extremely well and had one of the best games he's ever played up at Trade Tech. And hopefully that will continue right on through the regionals and the rest of them will also pick it up.
John Bauckham, after a string of great games, had a poor game against Rex.
Boy, I felt sorry for him. He just could not make the thing go in. He went 1-for-8 and did everything in the world he could to try to get it going. He let it affect the rest of his game as well, his defense and his rebounds and a few things. But hopefully he'll have a better night than that tonight.
What about starting lineup? Same as has been?
Yes, it will. We'll stay with Maxwell and Sean Anderson on the guard line. Gordon Anderson inside, Bauckham at 1-forward, and Dan Bell at the other.
CNCC, you expect to try to stall the game. Is the key to get an early lead?
Well, jump ball might be the most important part of the whole ball game. I don't know if we can say we really expect them. We have to be prepared that they could hold the ball because they've done it in past occasions. In fact, they did it at Rick's. And having beat them by 30 up on their floor, I wouldn't be surprised if they try something new.
There was a situation at CNCC, a little bit of extracurricular physical activity late in the ball game. Are the kids anxious to get at CNC because of that?
I don't know if they even remember it. No, we haven't brought it up at all, and I don't think they have either. I don't think that went into the game at all.
You have a couple of ball players that seem to play extremely well against CNCC. Wes Heimer seems to save his best games for Colorado Northwest.
I wish he'd save his best games for the big opponents rather than those that we're way ahead on, but he had an excellent ball game up there against them.
Coach Neil Roberts, thank you for being with us. Good luck tonight.
Thank you, Larry.
Ball in the red.
Three,
you can hear.
Two, one. We're talking with Kurt Jensen, head basketball coach at College of Eastern Utah. Coach, it's got to be a pleasing year. You were in most of the ball games this year, and your kids, you know, right down to the end, had a shot at the regionals.
Yes, we felt good about it. Of course, it's not always a good odds to come to Snow and Dixie and have a chance at the regional, but at least we had that opportunity, and if we had won last night, it could have come down to tonight's game, at least for a share or a playoff situation to go to the regional tournament. So we feel good about the progress of the program. We've made steady progress the last couple of years, and we've had a good season. We've played some real good ball and got a good group of kids, and I've enjoyed the season except for a couple of close games. One with Dixie earlier in the season that really haunts us. We've had a good year.
Speaking about that game with Dixie earlier, it seems like every year CEU gets hot in the final 10 minutes of the ball game.
Yeah, we really came on and made a great comeback that night, and that's what was kind of frustrating, that the kids had played so super to come back and get into the game and had a chance to win and then didn't. That really hurt us, and I think it showed the next night because we were really down against Snow College, and that was probably the worst game we've had all year.
Now, this is one of the larger ball clubs you've had.
Yes, we've had pretty good size this year, and that's helped us, and we've had good quickness, too. And just good balance. I've really enjoyed working this year with this group, able to do a little more than usual.
Now, Ted Gwynn has really developed into a consistent ball player for you.
Yes, he's had a great year. Had a super night last night. I hope he's got some left tonight.
Brad Boyle has turned out to be the best rebounder in the league.
Yes, Brad is a very fine jumper, got good timing, good hands, strong, and he's done a good job for us. We've been real pleased with Brad this season.
Now, in Price, Dwayne Newsom was one of the keys for CEU getting back to that ballgame. Newsom, extremely quick.
Yes, he is very quick, really helps us. He's had some real solid ball games for us. Been a little down lately, which has hurt us a little, but during the middle part of the season, he's played extremely well for a player who was just a walk-on, and we're real happy with him.
Oh, that type of talent. You must have some scouts following you around from some of the four-year schools.
Well, we've had a few that have put out some feelers so far. Nothing real sensational yet, but I'm sure there are a couple of players that have got good opportunities to go on and play somewhere.
Now, admittedly, this game, no matter what happens, win or lose, you'll finish fourth, Dixie will finish third. It won't make any difference to either ball club. How do you get your kids up for a final game like this?
That's a good question. I don't know. I hope that they have enough pride in themselves that they want to play well and finish the year, you know, with a good ball game. Sometimes it doesn't work that way. Subconsciously, they may want to do that, but sometimes it just isn't there because there really isn't anything to fight for. So, you know, in a way, you're not really that up for this kind of a game, although you are relaxed, and sometimes that's helpful, too.
Last night, you had an outstanding effort against Snow. Snow finally got you right at the end.
Yes, we had a real fine game. Very tight first half, and we were in it all the way until right at the end. Had a chance. We got down to five, and late in the game, we had a chance to do it, and a couple of mistakes, and they're a good team, and they played very well, and but I was very pleased with our effort. We almost got them, and there, you know, that was a night where the game meant something to us, and I think that helped us too in getting prepared and in the effort that we had.
Let's talk a little bit about tonight's game, the key for CEU versus Dixie.
Well, we've got to play good defense against Dixie as usual. I know every year we come down here, it seems like they just shoot the eyes out of the hoop. So hopefully we can turn that off a little bit. We've got to be patient on offense and not get behind and stay close, or we're in trouble on this court.
I still remember one game that you played on this floor that really was a shocker to a lot of Snow College fans on the on the league playoff.
That's true. I remember that, too. That was a highlight a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, I guess, when we had a league championship tournament. And it was really interesting that some of the scouts that came to see the final championship game wanted to know where Snow College was. And, of course, we had eliminated them the night before, and they came to watch Snow and Dixie play. So it did us some good that night. I felt real good about that.
A lot of people are wondering. I know that there has been a lot of promises thrown at CEU and at the athletic program by school administrators up the line that says, hey, there's going to be a basketball facility at CEU. How close is that?
Well, it's as close as what the legislature will do for us, and whether or not they will bond enough money this year to start building that project. And we've had the plans drawn for many years, and it's approved, and everybody knows that we need it. But now the legislature has got to come up with the money, and I think if they go to the bonding, which they're going to be discussing next week, then we may have a good chance to get it. We were fifth on the list, but somehow moved down to 14th, you know, when they start jockeying, so that hurt us a little too. We're still optimistic that it might happen. If we don't get it this year, then I don't know what'll happen.
Maybe a while.
It might be a while again, yes. It's something we really need. It would really help the whole league if we had that facility.
Back to this game tonight. What about a starting lineup for CEU?
We'll go the same way that we've been playing with Boyle and Ensign and Gwynn, Newsom, and Holston, four sophomores and one freshman.
Coach Kurt Jensen, thank you for being with us. Good luck tonight.
Thank you.
We're talking with Dixie College head basketball coach Neil Roberts. Neil, a good performance last night, especially that shutout for 10 and a half minutes.
Well, it's nice to start the ball game 22 points ahead where you can just sit back and play a lot of people and try to do some things. And one thing that was really helped us last night is we've been working on an offense against a zone that's a little bit different. And by getting up like that, it gave us a chance to use it for a good portion of the ball game. And so the players became more and more familiar with it and comfortable with it. And I was really pleased with the way we got out and the way we played early. And I was really pleased the way we played second half. In fact, defensively and board-wise, well, in fact, we beat them on the boards, I think it was 60-23 or something like that. And probably as aggressive and as intense as we've been since the first month that we were playing.
Led by Dan Bell. Bell had a super night on the boards and scoring.
Well, we spent some time with Dan this week talking about his responsibility is not just to be a player on the team, but be a special player on this team. And last night he was that. He really dominated board-wise and really worked hard offensively. He's just been kind of playing along, doing his part and playing well, but he's got to exert himself and be an outstanding player rather than just a player. Plus, he had some help, too. Gordon Anderson was extremely strong on the boards. And then John Bakken got back to the boards, too.
One thing about Dan, I don't think I've ever seen anybody have more successful layups that have had 16 bounces before they've gone down. He never hits one of them clean, but they all go in.
Well, that's also true from his free throw line, but he's got it awful close or else they're not going to go down for him. He just works hard. You know, he gets it in. He makes a good move to the basket. He's got good hands. He's sure with what he does there. And those rebounds he gets are just hard work. Just getting in the right position at the right time, getting ready to rebound, and just getting it off.
Gordon Anderson playing as intense as any ball player that I've ever seen at Dixie.
He is. The last 2 weeks especially, he's got back to every bit as good as we expected Gordon Anderson to be. There'll be times that he'll miss shots. There'll be times that we expect him to play a little better than he does. But his total concentration right now. Stat-wise, last night I think went 5 for 6 from the field, 2 for 3 at the line, had 11 rebounds, and I believe he had 7 steals in the ballgame. You can't ask a player to do more than that, especially from the post position.
John Bakken still struggling with his shooting, but doing other good things for you.
Well, John, the way he shoots is either going to be extremely hot or he's going to struggle with it somewhat. And at times he does struggle with it. At times he's got the ball on a string and can just do with it what he wants. But he didn't shoot really well last night, but yet it was interesting. We get on him about his shooting and people complain about it, but he shot 50%.
Robert Maxwell, Mark Durand, a good 1-2 punch there at that point guard. And Mark Durand causes excitement when he comes in.
Boy, I guess you're right. It's exciting because you don't know what to expect. And it's exciting because from the player standpoint, you know, they're going to get the ball when they're free, and he keeps his head up and he keeps his concentration on the floor. And he'll get him the ball if they're open. But yet, on the other hand, he will make some mistakes because he tries to press at times.
Last night, a combination of your win against CNCC and CEU's loss at Snow College, that puts you into the regionals. No matter what tonight, you'll finish third, CEU will finish fourth, and you go to Arizona.
Well, also we know that Mesa won their ball game there, and also Scottsdale won their ball game. So either way, we're going to be playing that ball game in the Mesa Scottsdale, which is the Phoenix area next week. And we have no idea who we're going to be playing that first game. They'll play tonight to go with it. So it should be interesting. We hope we have a good game tonight to have a carryover in the next weekend.
It'd be nice to face Scottsdale again, and yet the Mesa-Dixie rivalry has developed.
Well, I think it's developed from the standpoint that it seems like Mesa and Dixie always end up playing each other at the end of the year, and naturally that's going to develop some rivalries. We've had a chance to beat them. They've had some chances to beat us as well. In fact, last year we ended up playing Mesa the first game. The year before that we played in the first game. The year before that we played in the first game. So it seems like Dixie-Mesa either end up first or second and play each other quite a bit, and we wouldn't mind that a bit.
Tonight against the EU, what do you do with CEU? This is a big rugged ball club, and they chased you into overtime last time.
Yes, we got up 16, 18 points, even in the second half, and they came back and really got into us and played hard, and we had some letdowns, and we were fortunate to win in overtime. And is the reason we're in a position right here now is because we got that overtime win, which put us up a couple of games on them. But yet, Brad Boyle's a heck of a rebounder. He had 29 rebounds in one ball game this year, and he can score inside as well. He's averaging over 14 points a ball game. And Quinn is really a good offensive machine. He had 31 last night, and they went box one on him, and he still had 31.
Dwayne Newsom was a particular thorn in your side up there, the little point guard.
Yeah, he had 20, and most of it was take it to the hole, just extremely quick, and we hope we can get that shut down somewhat tonight.
Starting lineup for Dixie tonight, same as always?
Yeah, same as it has been the last couple ball games. Our rotation off the bench will be the same. That lineup that we're talking about will be Maxwell and Sean Anderson at guards, Dan Bell, and also John Bachman at forwards, and Gordon Anderson at center.
Coach Neil Roberts, thank you for being with us. Good luck tonight.
Thank you, Larry.
Three, two, one. I'm talking with Dixie College head football coach Ray Odette, who's now suddenly the head basketball coach. This is a strange turn of events on the penalty from the Utah High School Association.
Well, you know, it's been done, Larry, and what's done's done. And I'm not the head basketball coach, Larry. I'm just going to go out there, and we're going to do with the kids and just hope we can do the best we can do tonight.
Now, you've had a very successful junior varsity year.
Well, yeah, that's true. We've been lucky. We've got some good kids there, but, you know, the state tournament, anything can happen in the state tournament.
Now, the mechanics of what takes place up here, how restricted is Mark Pope?
Very. He can't even go into the dressing room before the game, at the half, or after the game, immediately after the game. He won't even be able to go into the dressing room, period.
He just stays with the team when you get outside of the event center?
Right. And, there's things that go on during the day, of course. We're not that naive, but he's just not allowed in the dressing room, period, or on the bench.
That's got to be tough. You're a head coach in the football. Having been in that situation, if you were put in the situation of Mark Pope, it would be frustrating, I imagine.
Oh, yes, to say the least. You bring a thoroughbred along and take him right up to the last big event of the year, and you can't put him in the race, and somebody else has got to do it for you. It's bound to be a little frustrating and a little tough.
Well, the kids have got to be a little bit depressed about the situation, not having Mark with them, but how are they reacting?
Well, I think that's mark of a good coach, Larry. They're not depressed. They're ready to go. That's a mark of a good coach in Mark Pope, that the kids are not depressed. He's brought them along, coached them all year. They're ready to go.
This tournament is going to be tough, well-balanced.
Hey, we're sitting right here watching Provo and Jordan play, and they're both excellent excellent basketball teams. And that means I hope we play the winner.
Well, you'll get one or the other either way.
Right, we'll get one or the other either way.
It's going to be a tough tournament, as we mentioned. Tempview favored over Murray, not favored by a whole bunch. Tempview came up with a victory.
That's what I understand. And we saw the Spanish Ogden game. The Spanish played Ogden very, very tough. And Ogden is a good ball club.
Provo has to be the favorite.
No question about it. This is a good, classy ball club. And I just hope Dixie gets the chance to play tomorrow, or Wednesday night, I guess.
Let's talk a little bit about the mechanics. What sort of preparation have you gone through with Mark Pope prior to coming to this tournament?
Everything I can think of, Larry. in our practices and everything, the last since we found out the turn of events was going to be, we've just worked together and tried to communicate the best way that we can, and just going to go out and see what happens. We're not going to change anything. We're going to go with what's got us here. We've won 16 ball games, and that's not too bad. And we're not about to change anything up now.
And Jerry Dyer has joined you as an assistant. Did so about mid-year when this penalty came forward, right?
Jerry's very observant. He contributes very much to the overall program, and we're glad to have him.
Tonight, going into this game against Logan High School, Logan has been an up-and-down ball club, got here really by a hairbreadth difference over at Box Elder. What do you expect out of Logan?
Hey, they're very tough. They've got some 6'5 people down on the bottom, and they've got some excellent people on the outside. And their preseason schedule is very good. They played Mountain View to 10. They played Orem to a 2-point loss. They've lost some very close games to some good basketball teams. We're facing a very good team tonight.
What do you expect out of them offensively and defensively?
Offensively, they're very deliberate, Larry. They don't take bad shots. They work it around and go for the good shot. And they're very, very deliberate. They'll fast break when they get the opportunity, and we expect a 2-3 zone.
For Dixie, will the pressure from the guards be the key?
We hope so. This is what we've been working on. This is what we're going to try to do. We think that our defense has been pretty good to us most of the time all year, causing turnovers, and this is what we're going to have to work for.
What about a starting lineup tonight? There was a change last time out against Cedar City. Will that change remain in effect?
No, we're going to go back with Hill. He'll go in the forward shot, and we'll go with the same kids that's been starting all year. Go with Hill back in at forward.
Cole Lay, Ron Lay to the guard line?
Right. Mm-hmm.
You've had some outstanding individual performances, even though it's been a good team effort this year. Dave Esquin and Ron Lay, their senior years have been great.
Well, they better be great here because, you know, the tournament's another season, and they're just going to have to keep carrying us. And I felt that it's been a pretty good overall team effort. And but your seniors have got to carry you, and that's all there is to it in this tournament like this.
Now, a lot of the kids had the experience last year as a junior-oriented ball club.
That's true, Larry, and that's why we're dependent on them so much tonight.
Chad Cooper, one of the big surprises this year as the season went on.
And he's coming along. We hope we can get Chad so he doesn't get in foul trouble at the start of the game, early part of the game, and I think Chad will be a factor to reckon with here by Logan.
Any injury problems?
No, nothing. We're ready to go.
Coach Ray Odette, thank you for being with us. Good luck tonight.
Thanks, Larry. If there's any luck floating around, give it to us, will you?
I'm talking with a head basketball coach at Dixie High School, Mark Post. Coach, as we greeted each other, I said it could be worse, and you said, yes, it couldn't be here. You are here, though.
Yeah, we feel good about that, and the kids, I think, are playing pretty well right now. We've got a good team unity, and we're coming up here to win.
This is kind of like being a candy addict standing outside the closed-up candy store, isn't it? You just can't reach it and touch it all.
Yeah, that's pretty much the situation. I'll just have to, you know, try to be patient. I have a lot of confidence in Coach Odette, which makes it a lot easier.
From your side, what sort of preparations have you laid out prior to this tournament?
Well, you know, us and the coaching staff, me and Ray and Jerry have sat down and, you know, went over the scouting reports that we've got on Logan and, you know, matched up and pretty well have our game plan, you know, all in effect. All Ray's got to do is carry the game plan out and make the adjustments that need to be made during the course of the game and, you know, give it the best shot that we can and let the chips fall where they fall. But I feel real good about it.
Now, Logan has a tendency to be a slowdown team, and you have a tendency to pressure people with those guards. Should be a good matchup.
Yeah, we're going to come out and press them right off the bat. You know, usually you do the press, we're going to get some turnovers or they're going to get some easy shots. So it kind of takes the team out of their slowdown game. They're either going to have to come down and shoot the ball or, you know, we're going to get some turnovers. And hopefully we'll get them going into our tempo. We're going to try to upbeat our tempo a little bit up here at the tournament and utilize our quickness a little bit more.
One of the problems coming from Southern Utah is the Northern Utah press is really unsure of Dixie. It's kind of divided whether Dixie or Logan will win this game in the predictions.
Well, yeah, I saw the Tribune picked Logan by 5, and I think the Deseret News picked us. I don't know by how many. But, yeah, it's a, you know, toss-up wise. No one even really knows how good we really are. They haven't really seen us. At times we look really good, and at other times we don't look too good. So, you know, it's kind of a funny team. If we play well, we're capable of playing with anybody up here. But if we don't play well, we're capable of losing to anybody. So I think it's just go out and see how we play. If we get in our tempo and if we shoot the ball well, I think we'll be in good shape.
Last time out against Cedar City, the kids had a cold shooting first half. Otherwise, it might have been a different story.
Yeah, I thought that was the difference in the game. The first half, they shot 50-something percent, and we shot about 35. And, you know, that took us out of the ball game. We missed a lot of easy shots, and we've had hot and cold nights. It's funny. Some games will go out against Springville. We shot the ball really well. We were over 50% for the whole game, and another night we'll come out and shoot 30-something percent. So it's, you know, that part of the game, it's really hard to coach, you know, a kid to make a bucket or not. It's just something that happens or doesn't happen. But I think our shot selection has been very good. It's just that we've been getting dry spells, and that's what's been hurting us.
One thing that's taken place is that four of your starters have had significant experience in the state tournament last year, two games.
Yeah, four of them are coming back. They know what it's all about. They went up last year and, you know, we played Tempe really well. Then the next night against Judge, we didn't play well at all and got hammered pretty good. But they know what it's like up here. They know what the competition's like. They know what you have to do to win up here. And hopefully they'll do those things tonight.
Now, if you win tonight, well, in fact, win or lose, you're going to run into either the pre-tournament favorite or the team that probably has the best shot of upsetting them.
Yeah, that's true. Provo and Jordan, we're playing right now. Two exceptional ball clubs. I think Provo is the stronger of the two. They're out here playing scrappy, really tough defense. I think this is probably the best defensive team I've seen all year long, and I think that's why they got the current 9-point lead over Jordan. But if we win, I look to play Provo. I think Provo's the team to beat, and I think they are beatable, though. So it'll be interesting.
This tournament so far, Ogden has won over Spanish Fork against a surprisingly tough Spanish Fork team. Tempe, given an arm load by Murray, still able to come out with a win. Any surprises in those two games for you?
A lot of people were surprised at the Spanish Fork game. It came out an 8-point lead with Ogden, but it was a 1-point game most of the first three quarters. Went back and forth. Spanish had the lead, you know, quite a bit of the time. And I think Ogden's got a fine ball club, but I think we're capable of, you know, our region is very capable of playing with that, the Ogden region up north. So I wasn't overly impressed with Ogden, but they do got a fine ball club, but I think they're beatable.
Coach Mark Poth, we'll let you get back into your easy chair now. This, it may not be quite as hot as along the coaching lines, but it's... In a way, you still got to be comfortable just to know that you brought the team here.
Yeah, we're here, and we're going to come up here and give it our best shot. I hope the kids can play well and show the people the kind of basketball we can play, you know, down south. And a good showing up here would, you know, make us feel good our last year in 3A for a while.
Best of luck with your ulcer.
Well, thank you, Larry.
We'll be back with more pregame activity after this.
Three, two, one. I'm talking with Ray Odette of Dixie High School. Coach, this is one game you'd like to win just because of the former ties with Jordan, if nothing else.
Well, not only that, Larry, but we want to stay in the tournament. We don't want to get knocked out of the tournament here, but we're facing a real good basketball team again tonight. Boy, they're tall, but if we get things going here, we might do something with them.
Monday night, disappointing and yet encouraging at the same time. The comeback was encouraging. The general play was a little bit disappointing.
Very, yeah, it was, Larry. You know, you hear tournament jitters, and I believe that's what it was. You turn the ball over as many times as we did. I think it was 24, and, hey, that's, you can't win ball games doing that. And I just think it had a lot to do with the first round of the tournament, and that's the way it is sometimes in tournament play.
A lot of the kids individually struggled.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. With the tournament play, they get a little glassy-eyed being in here for the first time, and the first time at Weber State. It's a fine facility, a sure beautiful place, and I think a little bit of tournament fever struck us.
And Jordan High School, they were humiliated by Provo, with Provo's defense, as strong as any defensive team in this tournament.
And that's what scares us. I think they probably got mad, and they'll come out mad. You hold a team like this, a Jordan team, to 24 points. It's almost unbelievable because they got 6'8 and 6'5, 6'5, 6'3, 6'1. That's a big ball club. And I just hope they don't get mad when they come out of here.
Jordan's been a streaky club all year. 8-game winning streak at one time. They're on a 4-game losing streak right now.
I hope it's five. And but they are up and down. But they're a good team, and we expect a good, tough ball game here.
The feeling among the kids, is the edge off now, or are they more comfortable with this field house?
I believe so. We're getting settled down a little bit here, you know, in Ogden and things. But it's still a lot of edge, you know. Our backs are against the wall. When you get in the Constellation, you know, you lose, it's over. You go home.
Tonight, the key, or I should say this afternoon, the key for Dixie.
Rebound. Hey, we've got to, and shooting, Larry, we've got to make a good shooting percentage. Take the good shot because, hey, they're a lot closer to the basket than we are. We either better get good board position or we better make some shots. That's all there is to it. And, of course, our defense is always the important thing. But if we can't make those easy shots like we blew Monday, we're going to be in trouble.
Jordan, can they handle the pressure from the guards from Dixie?
I hope not. We think our guards might be a little quicker, but we're just going to have to wait and see.
Great performance off the bench, Ron Denault. Okay. Three.
Off the Rebels.
Okay, yeah, we're at. Oh, boy. Three, two, one. Coach Neil Roberts, this has been, how can we say, an off-the-wall day in preparation for this game. Everyone seems to be loose.
Well, you know, that's hard to say. I haven't been around the players all day long, but I think they're ready to play. After pregame, we'll sat down with John Bachman for just a minute to talk about some of the things we're going to try to do. And he says, I've never felt better about going into a ball game and also the total team, not just himself. So, you know, we're coming off a couple of good weeks of basketball going into a situation that we've prepared for all year long. We talk about it being our third season, and it is a third season. Preseason, and then, of course, our regular season and preparation, and all of it is really preparation for this time of year. And if we can play well, it's a reward for all the time they've spent, and I really feel great about our chances to win this evening.
And we were talking last night, going over to a practice session. You mentioned that this team seems to play best when they're relaxed going into a game and not keyed up.
Well, we found that over the course of the year. We talked about the personalities of different types of teams. Some teams get so serious that it's hard or difficult to even say anything around them. But yet other teams, they can't play under those types of circumstances. It just depends on the type of kids and also the background that they came from. This group of people seems to play a lot better when they're free and easy and don't worry about things. And, of course, when you get to this stage, it's hard not to worry about different aspects of the game. But yet they seem to really settled into it and they're confident in what they're doing. They seem to relax today.
One thing that seems to be taking place every time you come to Arizona for a playoff, you usually meet first round a team that has given you a bad time earlier in the year, and the kids really want to get to them again. This is another team, Scottsdale.
Well, they beat us by two. The first game we played in the tournament down here and played extremely well in that. They beat us 81-79. In that ball game, we missed 13 or 14 free throws, so we definitely had our chance, and towards the end of the game did tie the score and had the ball back and had a chance to win the game. And then they went on and won the tournament. They're a good basketball team. In fact, they have one of their players was named as the most valuable player in the Arizona Conference and will be an All-American nomination besides. And an excellent player. His name's Brown. He's a 6'4" that does create problems for us. Crockett, their little guard outside, really creates a problem for us. But when we played the first time, and I'm sure they've made some adjustments since their first game as well, we play not really know what we have, and especially we don't know anything about what they have. And there's really not a carryover from year to year in junior college because of developmental of the older kids and also the young kids coming in. You never know what someone has. But, yeah, we tried to press Crockett, something you can't do because he's so quick. We didn't realize that Brown was so good. He had 20 against us. Taylor also had 17 against us, so those players are players that we hope we'll be able to handle. We know ourselves better now and definitely know a little more about Scottsdale.
They've added a little more size off the bench in Cecil Scroggins, who's now eligible.
Well, Scroggins was ineligible because of the academics, and even though he does come off the bench, he doesn't play a great deal, so I don't know what a factor he'll be. However, the center that does play, Jones, is a good player.
This is a matchup in this regional tournament of four teams. Three of the coaches have been here time and time again, and the coach for Scottsdale, Rand Hook, is only in his second year at Scottsdale.
Well, he inherited a pretty good team last year when he came in. Well, not inherited, but he brought that team with him and had a very difficult time last year. But, yeah, the maturity of the sophomores have really played quite well. They've won 27 games. They have lost three. All of his losses have been to games that he could have won, and they've never been blown away. They've had an excellent year.
Offensively, they like to run.
Yes, they do. They really like to run. We really feel like that we've got to make them play against our set defense every time down the floor, either their man or their zone. And then we also really believe that we can run on them, but we've got to get back and make them work hard for every shot they get. Plus, they board well. They're a good basic team. You don't win 27 ball games and not be a good team.
Defensively, they like the man-to-man.
They've played man-to-man every minute of every ball game, so they're basically a man-to-man team. It's really interesting, the four teams that are in the regionals, which realistically are the four best teams in our region. All four teams are basically man-to-man teams. So we change up a little bit. Snow changes up a little bit, and so is Mesa. But yet, 80% of the time, all the teams here will be playing man-to-man, which might say a little bit for that type of defense.
As far as the Dixie team, Gordon Anderson blossoming over the last couple of weeks has made the center's position as strong as it's ever been.
It is, and I mean this literally. Between he and Rich Kermillion, it's the strongest when we had Johnny Gilbert in the post, because those players are playing dominant. They're blocking shots, they're rebounding, they're taking the ball to the hole, they're creating problems that we haven't had. And then our forwards have become more and more steady with what they've done, and Dan Bell has been a steady basketball player all year long, but Bauckham's really starting to play better and better and more consistent. And then the addition to Byron Bytoy coming off the bench has really given us a lift there, both board-wise and offensively.
Alan Raymond is injured for this ball game. Will he be able to play much at all? He hasn't been playing a whole bunch of late.
No, he won't play at all. He has a severely sprained ankle, and plus he doesn't feel well today, so he definitely won't play in this ball game.
Starting lineup, the same as it has been?
Yes, we'll start with Maxwell at one guard and Sean Anderson, which has a big responsibility in this game because he's guarding a player named Myers that's a heck of a shooter, so he'll have his hands full. As will Maxwell, he'll be guarding Crockett, which is just a jet out on the floor. So our two guards will be tested tonight, even though we do plan to play a lot more zone than we have. Inside, Gordon Anderson will match up with Jones, and then Dan Bell will match up with their All-American Brown. And then our other forward, John Bauckham, will go with Taylor, which at times has scored really well for him. Matchup-wise, we're about the same as far as size is concerned. And it's just a matter of which team has come the most, which one can settle in and get down to play their game the quickest, and which one can relax and go ahead and win. We feel like that we can. We feel like we have as good a basketball team right now as we've had in past years.
The other matchup, Mesa and Snow, by the time this thing airs, we'll know who the winner is there. How do you assess that matchup?
I think Snow will beat them. Mesa is extremely small. Their biggest player is 6'4". Now, they have a 7-footer off the bench, but yet basically the players they go with is 6'4". They have excellent shooters as far as the guard is concerned, but yet that intangible if they play the excellent defense. I think they're rated 3rd or 4th in the nation as far as defense is concerned. They're only average with... They're only giving up about 57 points a game, and so they're not really letting people score a lot. They play a lot of full defense. They stand up, which at times has hurt Snow, and I'm sure that that can create problems for them. But yet, on the other hand, how do they handle Montgomery? That's going to take it to the hole. It's two inches bigger than the rest of them. How are they going to handle Heaton? That's going to do the same thing. And Cochran, that jumps really well. And then they can throw Bill Floyd out there, a 6'7 guard. Who do they match up with Bill Floyd? So it's going to be an interesting game. If Snow can settle down and play well, which they should because they're really a mature basketball team with those three kids who have had a great deal of experience, I really think Snow can beat them. And, well, Mesa's lost 10 ball games, which means that their consistency hasn't really been there. They won their first game of the state tournament last week, 77-44, I think it was. They won by 23 points or so against a team that was excellent. Central at one stage in their game had won 17 straight ball games. But yet, it's hard to tell. We're not at home. Last year, we're very comfortable playing in St. George, where both the Utah teams won. I think both ball games will really be a battle, but I'll go out on a limb and say I think Snow will win.
One sad note with this regional down here is always the support of the Arizona fans. Utah fans for Snow and Dixie always show up en masse. Arizona fans don't seem to show up that much.
Well, there's a lot going on here in Phoenix. Suns are in town, and Arizona State also playing tonight. There's a lot going on, and junior college basketball really doesn't create that much excitement here. The gym we're playing in probably seats 800 to 1,000 people, very small gym. They only have bleachers on one side of the gym. It's about like one half of the lower section as far as our gym is concerned, which wouldn't hold nearly the people that we get to our ball games. And then they only get a half a crowd as far as that's concerned. We've got a lot of people I know that are flying down from St. George. There's already half this motel, which has over 150 rooms, is filled up with St. George people. So there's a lot of them coming down. There's also some down here from Snow. We should have a full house, but yet the support that we're normally used to just isn't there. But yet we are playing excellent basketball teams. There'll be a lot of major college players playing this evening.
It's nice to be here again. This is what you work for.
Well, it's the sixth year in a row. However, we have yet to win after coming to Arizona. We've won our first game and lost the second one 1 year that Yavapai went on to the Nationals and took fourth in the nation, a game that we played excellently in. And also, that was the game that our kids that are sophomores right now played in, Gordon Anderson and John Bacham and Keener and all those players that are returned missionaries all played in that ball game. And we really think we have a chance to win. We've played this team before, and we played terrible. We didn't shoot it well. We didn't pass it well. We missed our free throws, and we just weren't very sharp in that ball game. We think we're a lot better than that. However, I'm sure they are as well.
It's going to be a challenge. Neil Roberts, thank you for being with us. Good luck tonight.
Thank you.
Counting 1-2. Do that.
As long as you promise me that you do that, because you know, it's an NCAA violation to have like a break, because that's when it would be released, Gordon, from our office also. Okay.
3-2-1. I'm talking with Dick Kuchin, the head basketball coach at the University of California, Berkeley. Coach, Cal Berkeley program, it's headed up in the Pac-10.
Yeah, it really is. We've kind of turned the corner in our program, I think, over the last couple of years in that we're starting to attract the type of student-athletes into our program that it takes to be competitive in the league, and right now we're very competitive.
The Pac-10 program as a whole, throughout the league, it's no longer just UCLA against the world.
It really isn't. This past year, with UCLA tying with Washington State for the conference championship, was the first time that UCLA had been involved in the conference championship over the last 4 years. So there's a lot more balance in the league, and I think that that trend is going to continue.
Let's talk about Gordon Anderson. What got you on to Gordon?
Well, you know, I think when you have certain needs in your program, you want to try to look to fulfill those needs. And basically, when you become involved in recruiting junior college players, we have not recruited a lot of junior college players to our program. But when we are looking at junior college players, we look for certain needs that we have involved in our program. And I think there's a couple areas that we really need help in, and one is on the backboards. And the other area is that we have got to make sure that we have enough depth in our front line to be as competitive as we want to. Because the way the game of college basketball is played today, there's got to be four guys up front that can give you minutes.
The Cal Berkeley program, will Gordon be starting? Will he be off the bench, or is it too early to tell?
Well, I think a lot of that's going to depend on, you know, Gordon. You know, I think that in recruiting it's a mistake to promise anybody that they're going to start. I think I would be disappointed if Gordon didn't have an impact on our basketball program, particularly as a junior college player coming to the university. But in terms of starting, I think that sometimes there's a tendency on the part of people to look too hard at starting or maybe set that as a goal. The way college basketball is today, teams are 8 and 9 deep, and to be part of those 8 and 9 are really what the goal of any player should be.
Specifically, how did you get to Dixie and Gordon Anderson once you got into the junior college recruiting?
Well, we knew what our needs were. So, you know, you follow the progress of certain programs that are good, solid basketball programs. And Dixie has placed a lot of people to Division I schools. And his coach has done an excellent job. Coach Roberts has done an excellent job in terms of teaching his players the fundamentals that it takes to be highly competitive on the Division I level. And I think that it's one of the programs around the country that people look at. And we had an opportunity to see Gordon play, knowing that we wanted to have a chance to see this particular program play and evaluate the players that were involved in the program. We had a chance to do that. And Gordon caught our eye because of the intensity and the level with which he plays at. And he's a highly competitive player.
The intensity was the thing that attracted you then?
Well, yeah, I think that it takes that type of intensity on the Division I level to be as competitive, particularly in our league.
Cal Berkeley recruiting, how's it gone otherwise with other recruits coming in?
Well, we think it's gone very well this year, and I think it's the backbone to the program. I mean, you've got to attract good, solid players if you're going to be highly competitive. We've signed four freshman players today, and we're really happy about that. Jim Beatty, who played on the state championship team at Oregon, and Jeff Ewling, who was on the second team All-State in Oregon, and then two guards from both from California.
University of California, Berkeley. Your reputation has been varied, all the way from academically successful to student riots to basketball excellence. It seems to be a mixed bag at University of California. What is the campus really like?
Well, I've been fortunate in terms of, as a coach, being involved in at the University of Iowa and in the Big Ten, and being involved at Notre Dame in South Bend, Indiana, and now as the head coach at the University of California. And the experience for me has been really a positive one, and I think it's been a positive one for our players that have been involved in the program. And I think that Berkeley has a uniqueness about it. There's probably something for everybody at the University of California. And there are sometimes that the university gets labeled or tagged, you know, because of what did go on in the 60s, and we're all aware of that, but by the same token, it's one of the great academic institutions in the country, and I think that we're all aware of that also.
The future of University of California basketball, do you anticipate playing for the championship this year?
Well, we...
Counting, one, two, three, four, five. Can't tell if there's a big one or not. Counting, yep, it's the big one.
Hey, who's the next hitter?
Whoa. One, two, three. Talking with Dixie High School head baseball coach Don Lay. Coach, this is what you've been working for all year, the chance at the state championship.
Well, we're playing in a playoff. We'd like to have gone in first place, not had this playoff, but at least we're in a playoff and the winner gets to go to state, and that's what it's all about.
It's nice that the coin flip came out on Dixie's side. You don't have to travel for this one.
Well, it's always nice to play down here. It's tough to ride 250 miles and get up for a ball game. I hope it works the same way for them coming down here. It does give you an advantage to play on your home field just on because of the mileage.
This year is a pretty good chase to try to get those state playoff berths in the region.
Well, yeah, we had a real good... even league this year, any team could have won it. I don't know if the best team won it, but they were a good ball club. But they turned around and won a couple big ones over Springvale and put them in. And then they came back and beat Pace in the last two games. So I guess you'd say that they're probably the best team.
Let's talk about your ball club. Dixie had some injury problems early in the year. You lost a couple of kids.
Well, we've struggled, but we've been able to win a little bit. We've juggled and had different players in different positions all year, but these kids have had some good moments of playing. Now, yes, we lost Dave Esplin and the Wade boy went on a trip, and so we had to break up the infield, what we had, and so we've been struggling a little bit.
Pitching-wise, the Jolly kid's been stalwart for you.
Jolly hasn't been beaten this year at the league. I think he lost one game early in the Sunshine Tournament. But he's been tough so far. We hope that he's tough tomorrow.
Let's talk about that revamped infield. How has it worked for you?
Well, we've had a lot of changes in the infield, and some days we've looked great, and then other times the games we've lost, we've broken down in the infield. But it's kind of coming together right now. The Wade boy's back, and he's playing a little more consistent than he was. And the Hale boys, he's probably got as much talent as any boy around. When he's doing things good, he's really great.
Let's talk about that outfield and how it's done for you this year.
Well, the outfield, we had two regulars back from last year, and Mitch Britton played for me last year. He's back. Early in the year, they were really outstanding catching, but we've had a little trouble with ground balls. We've been working on that, and I think we're getting that down. We hope the big play at home. We haven't been able to pull that one off, but we hope that we can get that down.
Now, Cole shifting from second base to behind the plate, that's a completely different position. It isn't just like moving to another spot in the infield.
Well, luckily, years ago, when he was little, I taught him how to catch. He probably did more catching than he did any other position until he got up to about, started in high school, and then he played in the infield. He's a little shallow on his arm. He's not that big a boy. He receives well, and he thinks well behind the plate. We haven't been hurt there. once in a while we get hurt stealing on him, but he's doing a real good job. We're not hurting there, only on sometimes maybe if they go down on him, but he's picked a few guys off, and he's pretty smart.
One of the big losses with Esplin is his bat. He's been a strong hitter for you in previous years.
Well, Esplin, probably that's his best sport. He may not think it, but I would say if he really wanted to concentrate on baseball and work at it, he's the right size. He's got speed. He hits the ball well. He's got a good arm, what pros look for. And he could gone a long ways in. It's too bad. We had a really outstanding team coming back until all these injuries net came back. We had a bunch of veterans. It should have been our year, but we still came out 7-3, which wasn't too bad.
Taking a look at that hitting, how's it going to fare against Orem?
Well, we've scouted Orem, you know, and we played Orem last year in the last game of the state game up there when we were up there, and we led them 7-0 and then got beat 9-7. The same pitchers pitching, and Jolly pitched, and so it's going to be kind of a rematch. We know a little bit about them. They're a good ball club. Some of their good players graduated, the Tate kid and Peterson. And they've got a younger team, but they, from my scouting reports, they say they're a fine ball club.
Taking a look at this game tomorrow, 2:15 in the afternoon, looks like the weather may hold for you.
Well, we're hoping. I was watching the weather reports. It said a little wind and storm was coming, but I hope it doesn't hit St. George. We'd like to go tomorrow with a good hot day, give those boys some heat down here.
What about the state tournament? Have you had a chance to find out about some of the powers from around the state?
Yeah, we know pretty much. Murray's always a tough ball club. They've been in there for years. Murray's a tough ball club. Ogden's coming back in, won the state last year, is pretty tough. They tell me American Fork's got a good ball club up here, and it's Pleasant Grove, the two teams in there. And so I think that's probably your powers, Murray and Ogden's probably the two powerhouses this year.
Let's shift gears just a little bit. Former Dixie High star had the best game of his career last night against Oakland.
Well, it said that on the radio. It sounded real great, winning 7-1, and he went the route. And I heard that he felt real good about it. And he says that it looks like everything's going okay for him. We hope him well.
Bruce Harris.
You got this play right here. This is what they've been running.
We'll just hold the tape recorders up a little bit.
Houston Oilers. What's going to be the outcome this coming year? It seemed to hurt to have Bum go.
Well, I'll tell you what. It's been kind of frustrating the last couple of years because of I think we've had more than anything a continuity problem. We've got the talent to be a great football team just like anybody else, and there's not that much difference between the winners and the losers in the NFL. It's a team that's the team that plays well together and works hard together, teams that are going to be successful. If you have
as far as Earl Campbell, is he still a great hero in Texas?
Yeah, he is. He's still a great running back. You know, a lot of people said Earl's over the hill now, and he's lost a few steps and everything like that. He is still as good as he ever was. Believe me, I think the only thing that he needs is just a little bit of help, and I don't think that we've given him the kind of help that he needs in order to show his greatness. It's an understatement, but no man can do it by himself, and I think you can see that with our football team the last couple of years. But I'll tell you, if there's one guy that would try and do it all by himself, it's Earl Campbell. He's a phenomenal football player.
What about the USFL? Now there's going to be Houston Blitz or Houston Gamblers team there also. What effect has USFL had on the attitude of the players in the NFL?
Well, I think everybody in the NFL wants the USFL to go, and I think the reason they want that is you can see what happens. First of all, it gives more young people a chance to play professional football. With all the teams, there are a lot of players that would never have had a chance to really play professional football without the USFL. As far as players are concerned, they want the USFL to go because it gives the players a chance to do certain things, you know. Usually in the past, if you're negotiating a contract and you don't come to terms with the team will say, okay, great, we'll see you later, or we'll see you in a couple of weeks, you know, because you'll be back. There's no other place you can go. Now there's a situation where players can turn and say, well, look, I can go to the USFL and be in this situation, or you can sign me and I'll be in this situation. So there's a competitive basis there, and I think you can see it with some of the top college stars this last year coming out and signing with the USFL, getting good contracts, and the NFL, you know, can't do anything about it. You've seen some very good players from the National Football League jump over and start playing for the USFL. So the competition, I think, is good. And we, speaking for the players, all want it to succeed.
Gene Upshaw, what will that mean to the Players Association?
Well, I think that it's going to be a good situation. We went through a very difficult year this last year with the strike, and, of course, nobody likes to strike. Everybody would have rather been out there playing. But you're looking at – I think the public has a distorted view of what happened during the strike. You know, I don't think you're looking at a bunch of money-hungry football players. I think you're looking at players and knowing how big of a business the NFL is, feeling that the benefits need to be like a big business. The hospitalization, the dental care, the retirement plan. You know, there are just a lot of things in there, injury clauses, a lot of things in there that the players wanted, and I think the players deserve and need it. Football is a high-risk business. You can go out on the football field and, you know, you never know what's going to happen. It's a short-lived business. One time you can be out there and you can be playing, everything can be great, and all of a sudden you take a couple of hits or a hit and your career's over with. You never know. So basically what the players were saying is, look, owners, this is a big business. We know it's a big business. We want to increase our benefits and make sure we're taken care of like a big business. And that's basically what it was all about.
There seems to be an image problem with the NFL this year, all of a sudden, the strike, drug problems, et cetera, et cetera. Do the players feel that?
Well, I think so. I mean, I think there have been more things come out of the NFL this year than I think there ever has. And, you know, as players, we understand and realize that. I think we realize that we're no different than any other profession, any other big business. I mean, you're going to have things like that happen in America, in other situations. And so, you know, it just so happens that in the NFL, you're in the public's eye, and you know, anything you do is going to be brought to the attention of the public. So it's kind of unfortunate that way, but, you know, people know that going in. Football is a Well, like I said before, football's a big business. People love to watch it, and people are interested in it. And I guess, you know, anything that happens, the public's going to find out about it.
You mentioned some of the clauses. What are some of the clauses or some of the things that the players got that they wanted in addition to money? And what are some of the things that they maybe would like to get?
I think, first of all, I think one of the best things that came from this, from the strike, was the severance pay. When a player gets cut or waived, depending on what year he's in the league, he gets a lump sum to get adjusted back into the normal society. I mean, here you got guys coming out of college who haven't been making a dime, okay? And they're not going to a business, in most cases, they're not going to a business where they're going to be making the minimum wage. They're going to a business where they're going to be paid pretty well, okay? A lot higher than most of them have ever been accustomed to living. And you're going to go that way, and depending on how well you do, depends on what that structure or level you reach. I mean, some of them start out. Jim Kelly, the quarterback for the Houston Gamblers, just signed something like a $3.2 million contract. I mean, the guy has been in college making, I mean, just barely getting by, you know, on a scholarship, having his schooling paid for. All of a sudden, he comes out and sets himself up for life. Well, some players aren't in that situation, but some players are in a situation where they haven't had a whole lot, and all of a sudden they've got money, and I don't, you know, unfortunately some of them don't know what to do with it and squander it. Some of them do know what to do with it and plan for the future. But one of the best things that came from this strike, I think, is the severance pay, where a player gets cut and he has to go back into a normal lifestyle. He's got some money to help him adjust. And the owner said, great, we'll give you this extra money, but we're going to do it on a severance basis, so we're going to keep it in a lump sum, and then when a player gets waived, then we're going to give him the money so he can adjust. Now, he can go out and squander it if he doesn't know, but we're going to give him a chance to adjust into the normal lifestyle. And I think that was one of the best things.
What are some of the things that they didn't get?
Well, you know, originally they were coming out saying they wanted a percentage of the gross, you know, and things like that. I think the NFL Players Association took that stand to make the owners listen, you know. Hey, we mean business. We're serious about this. We're not just, you know, here for the heck of it. We're really serious about this whole situation. And that, you know, of course, we didn't get percentage of the gross. They got a minimum salary. Players in the league so much, just like this Jan Stenerud thing. Jan Stenerud, a kicker, used to be for the Kansas City Chiefs and used to play for. Now he plays for the Green Bay Packers. He's been in the league X amount of years, so his minimum salary has to be $200,000 a year. Well, you know, the chances of that's one situation where, depending on how many years you're in the league, you have to have a minimum. I mean, there is a minimum salary for you. Rookies, I think the minimum salary now is $50,000 or something like that. And that's great for a rookie coming out of the league. I mean, who wouldn't want that? It gives players a chance coming out to make some money. And, you know, these are just some of the things. A minimum wage. Hospitalization benefits were increased. The dental benefits were increased. Our retirement plan was increased. You know, these are just some of the things that the players got. And, you know, it was a very difficult situation for everybody. I mean, the players were suffering, and, of course, the owners, because of not playing the television contracts, hurt them a little bit because we weren't playing. So everybody suffered. No, I don't even think anybody wanted to go on strike. It was a difficult situation for everybody.
What about Gifford Nielsen's future with the Houston Oilers? Is it as rosy as it was a couple of years ago?
Well, right now I'm in a great situation. I'm the starting quarterback down there. I've got everything going for me. And as far as that's concerned, now all I have to do is go out and play and perform and keep it. Stay healthy. I think that's been the toughest thing to do is just stay healthy. And I've never been an injury-prone person, but it seems like when it... It's just come in a rash of incidents. But, you know, I've got it right where I want it. Now all I have to do is go out and play.
Would you like to stay at Houston, or would you like to go out someplace else?
I love the city of Houston. I love the people down there. We've really enjoyed it down there. Of course, both my wife and I were born and raised in Provo, so it was a big adjustment going to Houston. I think the biggest mountain they have down there is going over the 610 freeway. You know, it's just, you get up there, you're in the hills. But it's a little bit different lifestyle than it is up here, but we really like it. I would love to stay in Houston at this point.
Pro football, is there as much of a drug problem as it appears to be?
Well, I think that there's been a lot of publicity lately because of, you know, I don't know the real reasons why, but... The publicity in the NFL on the drug problem has really been increased. There is a problem. I mean, we've got three guys in our defensive secondary that were caught this last year in different drug-related incidents. There is a problem. I can't deny that there's a problem, but I don't think it's as widespread as everybody thinks it is.
Did it surprise you to have those teammates caught? Did you suspicion that there were problems?
Well, I knew, in my situation, I kind of knew that something was going on, but I didn't want to know. Maybe that's the wrong attitude to have. You know, I don't believe in it. I don't think that people need to do it. I think that, I don't think our bodies need to be in that kind of a state in order for us to perform whatever we're doing, whether we're in the business office or on an athletic field or whatever. And my players pretty much, the players on our team pretty well know where I stand, so they don't come to me and say, hey, look, this is what's going on or whatever. So, you know, you kind of suspect that something's going on, but they kind of keep it from me. trying to stay away from it as much as I can. I want to help them out as much as I can, but, you know, I don't want to be involved with it. So.
What about the direction of pro football? There are a lot of good running backs in the league right now, and yet it seems like the passing game is becoming more popular, like it is in college.
Well, I think there are a couple of teams that are making that making it really flattering for players. I mean, people on teams to change to the passing game. You've got the Chargers, and you've got the 49ers, and you've got the Cincinnati Bengals, who are just throwing the heck out of a football. And people like that. People think that it can be done with the passing rules right now. The advantage goes to a passing team. And so, you know, a lot of people are starting to turn to a pass. I still think you've got to have, in the NFL, I think you've got to have a good mix. I think you've got to have a good running attack. I think you've got to have a good passing attack. And you look at the teams that are consistently in the Super Bowl, and they've got a mix.
Defense is what seems to be the direction now.
Well, defenses are doing just about everything possible to stop those passing games. You know, they're disguising defenses more. They're not playing true rules on what we consider like a zone defense. They're playing some zone, some man combinations, and they're doing everything they can to give quarterbacks a false picture, a false read. It's kind of like a chess game, you know. I'm sure these guys are going home, these defenses are going home and say, look, if we can show them a zone on this side and a man on this side, they'll never figure it out or whatever. So defenses are having to learn to adjust to the new passing tendencies that are coming in the NFL.
Is coaching getting better in the league? Is the coaching getting better?
Well, we've got good coaches. I mean, they're top quality coaches. They're the best, you know, and it's... Coaching in the NFL is it's tough business. Now there are some coaches that are entrenched and will stay with their teams forever, I think. And the rest of them, I think, are just kind of, I don't know. You look at last year. You look at the pressure that's in the NFL. You talk about pressure. You have Dick Vermeil resign. You have Bill Walsh of San Francisco who wants to get out of it. And who else? It was one of the big surprises. Oh, look, Walt Michaels, New York Jets. I mean, the Jets are right there. He's brought them all the way. He's built a great team, and all of a sudden he says, I've had it. Pressure. There's a lot of pressure in the NFL.
Just to follow the other game, Mitch.
All the time. My Cougars, I have to stand up for every week. And when they win, I'm on top of the world, and I make sure all my teammates know about
you're how... You're catching heat down there.
Those guys can't play. They're playing with a bunch of high school teams, and, you know, all these guys from the Big 8, the Big 10, all my teammates. But I make sure my teammates know exactly what my Cougars are doing, who they play, who they beat, how many records they set. No, they just... I think in the first year they knocked all mine out.
Do you and Mark Wilson and McMahon keep in touch regularly?
Well, not as regularly as I think, you know, just like Mark and I usually do a football camp together every year, but this is the first year we have, and I came down here and did this one. But we keep in touch. They're all good friends and good quarterbacks. But, you know, one's in Oakland, one's in Chicago, I'm in Houston. We're just about on furthest points of the country.
Do you think LaBelle will ever leave?
I don't think so. I don't know. You never know, but I don't think so. He's got a great thing going there. He's got a good tradition. I think things are working out pretty good for him.
What do you see happening to him?
Well, they build a really strong tradition right now, and I think that they, you know, with their strong tradition and especially with the way they do things, I think that they'll continue to recruit the athletes they need to keep it going. If I were quarterback, I'd want to go to BYU. And if I were a receiver, I'd want to go because you're throwing the ball. You're learning, you know, how to read defenses. You're knowing how to respond to different situations. And it's a great school for that kind of teaching. Just like a few years ago, well, even now, Stanford. I mean, quarterbacks who went to Stanford have been really successful in the NFL because they went to a school that really threw the ball, so they knew how to read and how to adjust. And like that. So it's a great situation if you're a throwing quarterback.
The last year, quarterbacks from BYU have all made it in the NFL. What do you think,
Steve Young,
Boswell, or some of
those? I think Steve Young's got a lot of talent. He's a great athlete. He might be the best athlete of all the quarterbacks they've had there, you know, just as far as just pure athletic ability. He's strong, he's fast. I haven't seen him, and I don't know how well he reads defenses or whatever. And I'm sure that he's gotten better over the last couple of years. But he's a great athlete. He'll do all right. I'm sure he'll get a chance to play.
Do you regret not throwing as much at Houston because you run the ball on Earl Campbell? That much of a change coming out of BYU? Or would you like to throw more at Houston?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, what happened was when Bum drafted Earl, you know, he was going to sit in the I formation. He had big offensive linemen. He had Leon Cray, and he had Bob Young, and he had, you know, Fisher. He had Casper on that side, and what they'd do is they'd just run Earl on that side. And, you know, we'd just line up and say, look, here we come, you stop us. It was that kind of philosophy. We had a big blocking back in Tim Wilson, and it was just hard for people to stop us. And consequently, that's what we were doing basically is running. I don't even know if we had any drop back passes. We had all play action passes. Every time we wouldn't turn around hand or we'd run a play action pass off him or whatever. Put a lot of pressure on him, but that's the way Bum wanted things run. And it was completely different than what we had at BYU where we were throwing the ball 30, 40 times a game. So it was a little bit different of adjustment, but in one sense it was really good because I had a chance to see a real good running program every game. I think we're going to throw the ball a little bit more this year than we have in the past.
Whenever we should get rolling. What we do is normally just get everything started, just that bombard you with questions.
Okay.
Buffalo, is it really the end all of the world in the NFL?
Oh no, I enjoy Buffalo. I think more players now are starting to enjoy it. When I first went in the league, I think there was only about four or five guys who lived in Buffalo during the off season, and now I think it's upwards of 15 to 20. And I've got a lot of good friends there. The weather is a little harsh in the winter, but it hasn't been pretty mild the last couple of winters. So I kind of enjoy it, and I like being there. I like playing in Buffalo.
Running back in the NFL, not an easy chore, is it?
No, it's not easy, and it's made a little bit more difficult because a lot of great running backs come out of college now. Every time you turn around, there's a great running back, and it looks like maybe if the USL is successful, they'll kind of deplete the supply to the NFL, so it'll make it a lot easier on older guys like myself.
Coming out of the Atlantic Coast Conference, ACC has the basketball reputation, slowly getting the football reputation. Is it an underrated conference?
For football, it is. It's if you really spent 9-10 years ago when I was playing in the ACC, we always had a team or two in the top 20. And when I was a junior and senior, we were 8th or 9th in the country. And we were really overlooked because we were really overshadowed with our basketball. But it's a good conference. It's produced a lot of good NFL football players who've been in the league a while and made names for themselves. So I think we've been unjustly underrated for years.
At Buffalo, what about the direction of the team? There's been a lot of complaints from fans, it seems to be, about the owner, Ralph Wilson, that he doesn't spend enough money, et cetera, et cetera. What about the feeling of the players?
Well, I tell you how I feel about it. We're there to do the job. We had a coaching change this year. hated to see Coach Knox go, but he's in Seattle. He'll do a great job there. We've got a good coach this year in Kay Stevenson, and a lot of guys like him. And he's a good coach, and we're going to do a good job. And I got back from Buffalo maybe a little over a month ago now. And that's the hardest I've seen guys work in a mini camp. And we're all excited about the season, and I think we're all just preparing to have a really good year and forget about all the politics and money hassles and everything and get back to playing football.
People think of Buffalo, they think of O.J. Simpson. It seems like every running back has Simpson's shadow to run in. How has that affected your game?
Well, it affected my game only because I didn't play when Juice was there. So it affected me that way. But he's been gone now, I guess, 3 or 4 years from Buffalo, and I think we made a smooth transition with Joe Cribbs and at times myself, and we've come up with big plays, and we've done the job. And you kind of tend to forget the superstars when you're winning. And so I think maybe they haven't completely forgotten Juice, but they know that other backs are capable of doing a good job.
The excitement about the new coach, will he bring more of a passing attack to Buffalo?
I think he will. I think Kay Stevenson is a pass-oriented, really complex offense type person. And I'm really kind of interested to see what happens because NFL coaches are, I guess, creatures of habit. We saw Washington win the Super Bowl with 2 tight end, 1 back formation. I'm really kind of interested to see how far not just Buffalo but other teams take that formation because Washington is so successful in it. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that.
One of the complaints about pro football has been the sameness. Do you see more variety coming into the pro game now from team to team?
Sameness with between team to team? Or
yeah.
One team
looks like another team, and the same thing happens every Sunday. Do you see more variety starting now?
Well, the last few years there's been a lot of variety with the different formations, the wide-open attack, San Diego, and their attack, their passing attack, and they've opened things up, and we adopted 3 years ago the Dallas formation, shotgun formation, and everybody's shifting, putting people in different spots, getting defensive calling audibles all the time. So I think it's been the sameness, so to speak. I think everybody's trying to adopt things that will work for them. But as I said earlier, it's kind of interesting to see that Washington won the Super Bowl with such a simple offense, so to speak, and it's going to be interesting to see what everybody else in the NFL does with it.
How many camps do you perform for kids every year?
This is the only one I've done for a few years. Early in my career, I used to do a lot back on the East Coast, that's where I'm from, and I used to do a lot, but I've kind of stayed home the last 4 or 5 years, so I really haven't done any.
Why is it that you haven't done as many?
Well, I haven't been asked. Two reasons. One, I haven't been asked, and two, I haven't been interested.
A lot of people are wondering, what got you from the East Coast clear out to St. George, Utah, midsummer?
Well, I live in Denver, so it's not that far away. And Cecil Stockdale is a friend of mine, and he's coaching here at Dixie College, and he asked us.
This is about the other extreme after spending winters in Buffalo to come to the summer in St. George.
I can't believe how high it is.
What about some of the kids you work with?
There was a lot of good athletes. I was surprised to find as many good athletes in this camp as I've seen. And we had a practice yesterday, and I kind of introduced to the running backs the kind of things that NFL running backs have to do to be successful, and we work hard at it, and we do it really repetitious in doing it. And I come out here today, and I don't have to do anything. They picked it up so easily. So I was really impressed with the kids and how they work and their attitude and their ability to pick things up so quickly.
What about that situation with Joe Cribbs and his holdout in Buffalo? What did the players think on Buffalo, and how did they?
Well, no one really begrudges someone for trying to make more money or hold out as a hold out tactic to make more money, because it's been done an awful lot in Buffalo. Unfortunately, guys have had to do that to increase their salaries. So no one begrudges Doug Cribbs, and most of us hopes that he gets what he deserves. And that's all any of us want. We're not greedy people asking for outrageous things. We want to be treated fairly and get what we deserve. If we work for it, why not get it?
What about the pressure on your personal life? Being in the public eye so much, that must have been quite a shock coming into the NFL and having so much media and fan focus on you, the individual, and Buffalo Bills as a team.
It's a little different than it was in high school and say, college. But you have to learn how to accept it and kind of take advantage of it and don't abuse it. It really doesn't affect me that much, because I kind of stay away from on the media. I don't do many interviews, and very low-key, and that's the way I approach the media, in a low-key way.
Atlantic Coast Conference, we talked about it gaining prestige. Looking back at college football now from the professional standpoint, do you see more of an evening out in college football, that the ACC is catching up with the Big Ten, and et cetera, and wherever you go in the country?
Well, I think all the conferences are evening out pretty much. And I think mainly it's due to the way recruiting is done now and the number of scholarships that are being offered to prospective college players. And I think that's helping enormously, where once we just can't go up and stockpile great players. They got a limit on how many scholarships they can give out, the number of trips a high school student can take to a college. And so I think it's evening out, and that's why you begin to see a balance in college football across the country.
We were talking with Gifford Nielsen about that. It seems to be a trend, or at least it appears to be a trend, to more of a passing game in the NFL, away from the running game, even though there are a lot of outstanding running backs. He said that there seems to be more balancing, having to get that passing game to go with the running back. From a running back's position, do you see more passing? Do you see an increase in the running back's game, more balance?
Sure. When I first came in the league, with O.J. Simpson and all the other running backs in the league, that's all it was. It was, everybody knew Juice was going to get the ball, or the running back on that team was going to get the ball. And the last couple of years, it's really opened up the offense, and they started to utilize the running backs in pass patterns. We run a lot of pass patterns. We have to run and read the defensive secondary on the run. We have to determine whether it's a man defense or a zone, and have to adjust our routes accordingly. So that's been a big difference in the passing game for the running back, where normally we used to be, in the earlier days, we used to either stay in a block or ran a little flat pattern, a little swing pattern, really didn't get involved. We use mainly as control, to control the underneath coverage or whatever. Now we become primary receivers. We have to be agile and quick and be able to catch the ball. And they really incorporate the running back into the passing game, which I think is good. I enjoy it.
Do running backs really treat the offensive line with tender loving care?
There's not an offensive lineman I don't love them. if they don't do their job, there's no way possible we can do ours. That's for sure.
What about Reggie McKenzie retiring? Does that?
Well, that's news to me. I hadn't heard Reggie was retiring. I know there'd been some talk in Buffalo about Reggie being traded or asked to go somewhere else. I had no idea that he had retired. He has retired.
Well, may or may not. It's tough to get the word out here. There were rumors that he's retiring, words that he's going to be let go, words that he's going to be traded, and it's kind of a melange of things.
Well, I kind of think that Reggie will be traded somewhere. I think
that he'll stay in the league?
Somewhere in the AFC.
United States Football League, has that meant a lot for you as a player?
I tell you, I've really enjoyed the USFL. We live in Denver, and Keith and I go down and see the Denver goal play, and I enjoy it for two reasons. One, I'm not playing getting beat up. And two, I can sit back and enjoy a game, and I don't care who wins. So I kind of enjoy it.
That increases your bargaining power, though, doesn't it?
Well, for the younger guys, it really does. For an old guy like me, what it does is I don't have as much competition as I would have had ordinarily.
I guess maybe I'll get Keith.
Fire away, fellas. Working from the defensive angle, the increased passing game, much more young passers coming into the league, that puts extra pressure on you back there.
Yes, it does. And not only are there more of them, they're a lot better. I guess as the college game becomes more sophisticated and more like the professional level, I think it's enabling a young quarterback to step in and play sooner than years ago.
I was asked about the Western Athletic Conference. The WAC has had a so-so reputation as far as football, especially after the Arizona schools left the conference. Do you feel, coming from the Western Athletic Conference, that it's underrated, that it's a much better conference?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a real strong conference. I don't think the WAC gets as much notoriety as it deserves. It still is a very wide-open conference. It's a lot of fun to play in because most of the schools are in fairly good weather. And the people who are involved with the WAC love football. But like you say, after the Arizona teams left the conference, they kind of took from there. You know, Ryan.
What year did you graduate?
80.
So, did you play against Duke Brady? I guess he was right.
I played against Mark Wilson and Jim McMahon.
So, you were used to the passing game when you got into the pros and facing the passing game?
Well, not facing it. Yeah. Being in the passing game, yeah. I was the passing game. A little bit that we had at CSU. You know, I was on the other side of the ball in the throws, so no matter who was throwing the ball, it was different from you.
So. Adjustment to going to the defensive backfield in the pros. What's the biggest adjustment going into the pros for you, besides just making the switch?
Having a defensive attitude, being aggressive, being able to think and adjust on the move. And the physical aspect of the position of defensive back. I feel a quarterback is the toughest position on the field mentally to play. Physically, I think defensive back, without a doubt, physically is the toughest, most grueling position on the field for a number of reasons. One, not only do you have to be fast running straight ahead, you have to be fast running backwards. Then being able to adjust and run sideways, then run forward. Being most of the time the smaller guy on the team, you have to be tougher than a lot of guys on the team because you're tackling 225, 250-pound fullbacks, very fast tailbacks, covering receivers that are 6'5", 6'6", 6'4". Run, jump, think. Physically, it's a lot more involved. And defensive back.
So do you feel that the defensive back is the best athlete in the game?
Without a doubt. Sort of an injustice in the game also. It's the lowest paid athlete on the field too.
What about New England? The Steve Grogan situation, will he be your quarterback this year?
I don't know. I certainly know this for a fact, that he's very able to be our quarterback. He's proved that over the years. And playing with him for 2 years, I know that he'll be in the running. And if he's out there and he's our starting quarterback, I don't think anyone will have any hesitation or doubt about being behind him because we know he can do it.
The toughest quarterbacks for you to face, who are they?
That I have faced. I remember facing Ken Stabler 2 years ago. I haven't faced him yet, but just watching him on the film was without a doubt to me he's the best quarterback in the NFL, and that's Ken Anderson from Cincinnati. Fortunately, we don't play them this year. I think Woodley from Miami gives me a lot of problems because he can throw and run and think. He's an excellent athlete. So when you have an athlete at the quarterback position, that's just another dimension that you have to worry about.
More than just an arm.
More than just the right arm.
What about the receivers? Who has been the toughest for you to cover?
Oh, I had a lot of problems with Dario Harris from Miami.
You're not alone.
That's good to know. But one guy that I practiced against for a year and played against for two, Frank Lewis from Buffalo, I think is phenomenal. To be 35 years old and to do the things that he does at that age, to me, is amazing. And he does them well. He doesn't get a lot of notoriety. You don't hear about him. But knowing Frank and the type of person that he is, that's the way he wants. Very humble, and he does his job, and he does it well. But he gives me a lot of problems.
Any running backs that are particularly tough for you to bring down?
Earl Campbell. Earl Campbell, he and I had a battle a couple of years ago that I don't think either one of us will forget. It was a do-or-die situation. And luckily, I came out alive. Earl Campbell's tough. Joe Cribbs is extremely tough.
What game was it that you had a battle with him? Do you remember that?
I remember that was the first game. First game I started in the NFL. Mike Haynes had a problem with one lung, so I had to play. And it was my first NFL game. And I was starting.
Was that 1981?
That was 81. And I started, and I remember thinking, what a time to get broken in against Earl Campbell. And second play of the game, I got hurt. I came up, and Earl was running a sweep, and he had a big guard in front of him, and he was behind the guard. And I remember thinking, what in the world am I going to do? And I tried to take on the guard and get a hand on Earl, and I ended up hurting my whole body. But I remember on the sideline being in a lot of pain. I realized that, boy, if I can't take it, I won't be in this league very long. And I just somehow got back out there and had a good game. I had, I think, 6 or 7 unassisted tackles and an interception.
How many of them against Earl?
All of them against Earl.
Is that right?
Yeah. And that game meant a lot, you know, to me. I felt like I proved to myself that I could play in the NFL, and after that, I felt great.
Who won that game?
We did. It was one of the two games we won that year. 2-14 that year.
There seemed to be some. Go ahead.
Did Gifford play in that game?
No. David played.
There seemed to be some turmoil involving around John Hanna and Gray. What sort of problems did that cause with New England as a team?
John Hanna at one time was very well respected by the New England Patriots players and other teams around the league. I think what happened is that he made a couple of moves that stimulated some disrespect. And through the disrespect, I believe he became bitter. And through his bitterness, he installed in other people a negative attitude toward him. And when there's any negative vibes going around on a team, in a team atmosphere, I believe that you don't have to say anything or do anything. It's just felt. And I think he felt it, and he felt like the best thing for him to do was to get out of the game. Apparently, he wasn't interested in being traded, or if he did request to be traded, the New England Patriots felt that they couldn't get anything for him, possibly. I don't know. But based upon his decision to retire, he probably felt like that was the best thing for everyone.
New England was pressing towards the top not too long ago. Will you be back there again this year?
Oh, I think so. I think one of our we've got a long, hard roll to hoe, but in our conference, we've got the Jets, Miami, Buffalo, and Baltimore, and it's going to be tough. I think the winner of our conference will definitely be somewhere close to the Super Bowl, if not there. I really do, because four out of the five teams, I think, tough us around. And I think with our defense coming on the way it did toward the end of the year, I think we're going to be someone to be dealt with. You know?
Over the past decade or so, it seems like it's obvious that the defenses in the NFL are becoming more sophisticated. In your short time in the NFL, have you felt a more sophisticated defense coming on, requiring more thinking among the defensive players?
Oh, yeah, just in the short period I've been there. You used to play zone defense, and you just run to an area and just wait. Now you're zoning the pattern, which involves in a lot more thinking, a lot more reaction, a lot more study. So it's becoming even more of a thinking man's game. It was like that all along. I still believe 80% of the game, especially on the professional level, is mental. Because if you didn't have the physical tools, you wouldn't be there from the beginning. And where you make the difference is in the mental preparation and the mental attitude. Then 20% is your physical toughness. Incorporated with that is your physical ability and talent. But if you didn't have superior talent, you wouldn't be there. So, extremely complicated now. Extremely complicated. So, a lot more study time is required nowadays, I think.
New England fans, are they kind to the team? Are they pretty rough?
I don't think any New England fans read the Utah newspapers. But, no, I don't like them very much, to be very honest. They're narrow-minded. Narrow-minded, they might call it as being honest. But if they're honest, they're not very nice people. They're different people. They're fans, and they're true to the sense of the word of fanatics, I think. That's not to generalize and say they're all like that, because I've met some super people who I wouldn't trade their friendship for anything. But most of them I don't understand.
You find a difference, significant difference in fans as you go from city to city?
Buffalo fans were fanatics in the sense that they were crazy about Buffalo Bills. They Buffalo Bills can do no wrong. And they weren't too happy with anyone else. You know, you go in there and say, hey, I'm a New England Patriot. Well, they immediately hate you. But that's part of the team hometown spirit. That's sort of understandable. But in New England, they love you as long as you want. If you lose, then you know, I don't care who you are. New England Patriot, you stink if you lost last week. If you won, you're the greatest. And that inconsistency, to me, is sick.
Is there any city that you've been to where the visiting team gets a positive reaction from the fans, not so much because they hate the home team, because they're willing to give you credit?
Yes, I can't think of the ones who played somewhere. Where was that? I can't think of where it was, but that's happened to me while I was with New England. I can't remember what team it was, but that's happened before. And that's real nice.
The fans haven't picked them up personally? As opposed to just the team?
No. I'm not very known, so I can kind of stay back. But I like it that way. I don't need all the fanfare and all the autographs and all that. I'd rather just, when I'm out there, I'm out there. When I leave the stadium, leave me alone. You know, just a normal guy.
Would you recommend pursuing a pro football career for young college football players?
No. I like to see them play college football, play football as long as they want, but I believe that professional football should be, for them, should be something that, if it happens, it's great. If it doesn't, it's no world-shattering event. A lot of guys base their whole life, I want to play professional football, and they gear everything toward that, and I don't think they should do that. I don't think they should do that toward anything. Professional football, I think they must realize, when you go from college football to professional football, it's no longer a game. It's actually no longer a sport. It's a business. And as soon as you sign a contract on a professional team, you become a businessman. Not an athlete, not a player, not a sportsman. You become a professional athletic businessman. You become, your body becomes your investment. And as soon as that investment no longer yields benefits, you're thrown out with the rest of the garbage. And if they don't realize that, they can really be hurt and really be bruised emotionally if they're not careful. But as long as they know that's what they're getting into, professional football is fine. If you want to invest your body into professional football and you feel it's a good investment, go right ahead.
But do you work with kids in camps very much like this?
I worked with the Mile High Camp, I guess, a couple of years ago. At that time, he was in Fort Collins, Colorado. And then this one. I think that's all I've done with a real camp.
Do you think you learn much from the kids? I mean, about their attitudes? Does it help you to reflect on anything?
It helps me, and it reminds me that it reminds me of how much I love the game and how much it meant to me when it was just a game. When I was playing just for fun and just for the pride of it, just for the sake and the joy of winning. It kind of brings me back down to earth, and then in 3 weeks I'll get back to my business.
Is it possible to, given the context of pro football, is it possible to still have fun with football?
Oh, yeah. Guys on different teams that you meet, some of the greatest people you ever want to meet. You know, they're just great people. And that I enjoy that a lot about professional football, the guys that you meet. Like Roland, you know, just super people. And, boy, that's really valuable. And the traveling and the competition is still fun. You know, on game day, you don't think about a check. You know, you don't think about the money. You think about winning. But it's just for that moment. Then after the game, you start pushing yourself. Because if you don't ask for it, you won't get it. Yeah, there's still some fun to be squeezed out of. And, boy, if all the fun was out, I don't care how much fun, I wouldn't be in it. But there is still some fun.
Do you find the physical pain more now in pro football than after a college game? Or is it still the same sort of thing?
A little bit more, because the hitting is hard. The effort, the physical effort is hard. Because, you know, in professional ranks, everybody's superb. Whereas in college, you might have one or two guys on a particular team that's superb.
Since you've been in the game, how many injuries have you had in professional?
I blew my knee out, I guess, in 80. I was drafted by Buffalo. I hit my knee in the preseason game against Detroit. I didn't have surgery. I was supposed to. But I don't like getting cut, so.
Had a cartilage? Was it cartilage?
Ligament.
It never was operated
on. I used a Cybex machine, and doctors were amazed. They thought they were going to have to cut, and I rehabilitated myself. And in 6 weeks, I was practicing. I've had shoulder problems before. Last year, in fact, in the playoff game, I hurt my shoulder.
What kind of injury was your shoulder?
Sublocation.
What location?
Sublocation. You know, the ball and socket that fits in your shoulder, the ball slips out.
The first game that you talked about, that wasn't really an injury. You just got shook up really bad on the play against the
Yeah, just
If it was possible, would you like to go to another team? Would you like to be traded?
No.
You like living in the New England area?
No. No, I don't like living in the New England area. I'm just satisfied. I'm just satisfied. I have nothing to go. Well, I'm satisfied.
United States Football League, what has it meant to you personally?
Oh, I think it's great. It opens up an even greater opportunity, not only for me, but for people like Cecil Stockdale, who have no business out of professional football because they're too good to be sitting around. It opens the door for those type of people because, you know, there are only 28 teams in the NFL, and there are thousands of guys who are good enough to play. There's just not enough room for them. And this gives them a chance, you know, to get out and show their skills. So, and as far as it relates to me, later on down the line, or even sooner, when the legs start to go and start losing a couple of seconds, a tenth of a second off the time or something, and a young team in the USFL needs some experienced defensive backs, well, that could be a possibility for me. And also, if I ever decide to get into coaching, which is a very strong possibility, there's another coaching potential there for me. So I think it's going to help everyone. I really do.
She's going to have a shot.
I don't know. I don't know. I think he deserves one. Whether he gets it or not, I don't know. But he sure deserves it.
How would you classify yourself just as an individual, not a football player? I mean, are you an outdoor lover?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Fishing, camping, hunting.
So where you live in Denver?
Yeah, partly. My wife's from Denver, and I was raised in Los Angeles. I have a child, Lamar. I have a son, Lamar James, who is great, and I didn't want to send him through the same hard life of growing up in Los Angeles that I had to go through. And I think Denver is a beautiful place to grow up. So for his sake, I think Denver is feasible and very realistic for a growing child.
Would you encourage him to play football or give him a tennis racket?
I'd probably lean toward getting him a tennis racket. But if he wanted to play football, you know, he's got all my, everything that I know he has. And I'll help him, but I won't. I will, if he does want to play football, I would encourage him to play something else too. Baseball, basketball, tennis, golf, all of it. Because I think there comes a point in time when he has to make a choice if he's really serious about it. If he never becomes serious about it, then do anything you want. You know, play volleyball, basketball, anything. But I don't want him to be exclusively football because that's not everything. That's, if I had my choice, actually, I would rather him go to law school and become a judge. Sit on the United States Supreme Court. That'd be great.
His name is Lamar James. How old is he?
He's 10 months. He's a good kid.
He's about that stage where he's starting to run patterns.
Yeah. He's starting to walk him a little bit. He's starting to rip him down.
Put the patterns with a crayon across
the head. Yeah.
What about some of the kids you meet at the camps out here? Do any of them impress you, or you know, what do you think of some of the kids? Do you remember any of them?
Yeah, there are some good athletes. Good athletes out here, from especially from Springfield. Boy, there's some good athletes out
here. Remember names of any of them?
What's Jake's last name?
James.
Mm-hmm. His nephew.
Oh, Eric?
Is that his name?
Uh-huh.
He's 24. He's got a
little Eric running back.
Yeah.
He's 24?
He's
number 24.
Number 24.
He is a good athlete. Super athlete. Mm-hmm.
Another kid, Chris. I don't know his last name. He's number 27. I don't know his last name. Good athlete. Then there's a quarterback there, number 7. He's standing about 6'5".
What are some of the things that David
question? Oh, just they do some things that you can't actually coach. Natural. They have an innate nature sometimes. There are a lot of things that you can coach an athlete to do as far as technique, plays, fundamentals. But there are some things you can't coach. I mean, the guy has to be born with, such as agile feet. You can improve their feet, speed, quickness, but they have to have a little bit to start with, you know, to really improve. You don't have anything to improve, you're wasting your time. But agile feet, hip motion, ball judging.
Just a field knowledge.
Field knowledge, also. Know, even though they have their back turned, to know that they're close to the sideline or not close to the sideline. Things of that nature. And one thing also that I noticed, there are a couple of guys out there who I can tell have an aggressive nature about them that you need to play football. You have to be rather aggressive. You almost have to love the aggressiveness. That's why some people claim that football players are a little insane. Well, he is. You got to be crazy about to not care for another guy. But